God's instruction concerning Babylon, come out of her, my people.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Not necessarily difficult. So, yes, Dr. Dan, well, yes, I hear the music.
Okay, well, we're going to a break here. So, but anyway, of course, we'll try to get all of this information to you. And I think it's important, ladies and gentlemen, that you understand that the world is on the verge, I think, of some dramatic changes. I think the America that we've known is no longer exists and will never come back again, at least not during my lifetime. But our job is to survive during the coming time and understand the spiritual forces at work. Lindsay, go right ahead.
10 agendas that I was given by my elite friend that will take place in the next 4 years during this administration. The first one, the elite do not want a financial collapse yet. I know this is very unusual to hear someone say this when nearly all the financial newsletters have been saying for months, going to be a collapse, going to be a collapse, going over the physical cliff, all this sort of thing. Scare tactics galore, has the whole country upset, and everyone wondering what's going to take place. Let me assure you, the elite do not, and you did hear me say the word not, they do not want a collapse yet. Now, there's more to it than just that. That's one of the agendas. They don't want a collapse right now. It is going to take place. Believe me, it will happen. It's not that it will never take place. It will take place. But it's not going to take place in the next month or two. It probably won't take place within the next 2 years. You are hearing me. I'm sticking my neck way out tonight. Based on the information I have been given, you probably are talking 2 years, 3 years, but somewhere within this four-year period, there is going to be a catastrophic event relating to the currency of the United States of America. They have not told me what that event will be. I did not say a bank closure, even though that may be it. I didn't say a bank holiday, but that may be it. I don't know what it'll be, but they don't want it yet. And the reason is, and this is agenda number two, you need to write down the first word. The elite are going to, over the next 4 years, force debt creation. Please catch that first word. Not just debt creation. Now, they've been creating debt for years. The housing bubble and collapse was debt creation. Our national debt, $16 trillion of national debt plus. Now, you haven't seen any debt yet. No, believe me. What's going to take place over the next 4 years, what has happened in the past is a Sunday school picnic compared to what's going to happen in the future. And you as an individual, everyone listening to this program tonight, you must guard against what they are about to do. Forced, not just regular debt creation. Now, they created debt over in Europe. You know what happened in Greece and France and Spain and the other countries over there. I'm talking about forced debt creation. Let me try to explain very quickly a number of these so that you'll understand what has happened and what is going to happen.
Hold that thought, Lindsay. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lindsay is certainly giving 10 items that he was been told by our mutual friend. And the first one was, of course, that the elite does not want a debt collapse. It does not want a financial collapse at this time. That doesn't mean that one isn't going to occur or they're not going to precipitate it, but it's not going to happen within a matter of months, and it may be several couple of years, but sometime probably within the next 4 years, 2 to 4 years, where there will be certainly a monetary collapse, but not right now. Of course, from my point of view, I know that they certainly want to use the financial and military power of the United States to consolidate their control of the world. Of course, it's very obvious that they are using America's financial and military power. So Lindsay feels, and I do as well, that at least as far as the elite is concerned. Now, remember, there are other forces in the world besides the elite, and that, of course, are the dark spiritual forces working behind the scenes. But at least the elite, these people of great wealth, want, of course, continue using America's military and financial power as they topple existing governments and install their rulers. Incidentally, Mr. Morsi, he's, of course, the current dictator in Egypt that we installed. Do you know where he went to school? He went to school at USC in Southern California. Yes, sir, an American-trained Egyptian has just become and tried to declare himself the dictatorship. Dictator in Egypt. We installed him. Of course, the people are very unhappy whether he'll have to back off and maybe even give him a full little freedoms for the time being. Oh, but here's a man, American-trained Egyptian, trained at USC. Why doesn't anybody ever talk about the fact that we installed a man who was trained at one of our universities? Well, the second point was that there will be forced debt creation. And basically, as you know, why, of course, when George W. Bush became president of the United States, the federal debt was about $5.7 trillion. When George W. Bush left the White House after 8 years, the federal debt was $10.7 trillion. The federal debt today is $16.3 trillion, and that is less than 4 years of Barack Hussein Obama in the White House. So basically, of course, they are intensely creating debt in America, over in Europe, all throughout the world, in China. And debt, of course, is a means of destroying civilization. Go right ahead, Lindsay.
Forced debt creation. I hope you're catching that first word. Let me try to explain. Many years ago, back in the 50s, I guess it was, the first credit card in the United States of America was American Express. MasterCard, Visa, the other cards had never even been invented yet. And when they came out, I was doing a lot of traveling. In fact, I had my own aircraft at the time, was flying for missionaries, and I got an American Express credit card. Well, here, what, a year or so ago, they said, American Express, you can't do this anymore. You're the only one out there that's different. You must become a bank. They forced American Express, the credit card of many, many years, to become a bank so that they could be controlled by the Federal Reserve. I'll give you another example of forced debt creation. The students, the average young person graduating from high school today, they have convinced them that the only way they can go to college is to get a college loan from the federal government. Now, when I went to college many, many years ago, believe me, I worked my own way through college. I bagged groceries. I worked for Avis driving automobiles. And I paid my entire college for years enough to get a bachelor's degree. Today, students think, well, the only thing they can do is go to the government. This mindset that they have put them in is a form of forced debt creation, and when they get out of college, and then they can't find a job. The jobs have been moved to China and India and Mexico, and try to find a job in America, anything besides flipping burgers. So, let me give you an example. You're hearing right now, physical cliff. Oh my goodness, I get so sick and tired of hearing this physical cliff thing. I don't know what to do when I talk with my elite friend, and I hear what the physical cliff is really about. It's kind of a laughing stock. It is nothing but a hype, a psych, some way to get you to believe that something is so in order that they can do something else. It's a distraction. It's one glorious method of mentally programming the individual for what they want. Physical cliff is a part, please catch this, people, it is a part of debt creation which they wish to do. And this brings me to my third agenda of the elite. Who is going to hurt most by the physical cliff? The rich who are going to have to pay? Not on your life. Do you realize that the rich have stored their wealth away in the Cayman Islands? They've put it in Liechtenstein. They've put it in Switzerland. They've put it all over the world. These people aren't going to be destroyed by taxes. You know who is going to be destroyed by taxes? The physical cliff is nothing but a hype in order to do what they want to do for the middle class. And I have a prediction. You can watch it. as my elite friend has expressed it to me, the middle class in the United States of America is literally going to be taxed into oblivion. Are you catching this? Not the rich. Oh, yeah, the rich will pay a little bit. But the middle class are the ones that will hurt most. Let me suggest a few things that are in the wind behind the stage, back there where you don't hear it. All you're hearing is physical cliff and they're scaring the daylights out of you in order to get you ready for what they plan to do to you. You might have something called a marginal minimum tax. They may call it a national sales tax. You already have one new tax that's out there that's inevitable. And this one you can believe in, along with the others that are going to come shortly after this physical cliff. Obamacare, they realized that they could not get you to pay for a premium because it was unconstitutional, and the states wouldn't go along with it at all. Now, when you buy life insurance or you buy hospitalization insurance, what do you pay? You pay a premium. Obamacare, is it a premium? Not on your life. It's a tax. Are you beginning to get the message? Forced. You have no choice. Either that or you go to jail or you're being fined. Obamacare is a form of what I have just been told that you will see over the next years many instances of, and that is forced debt creation. Now, watch what happened 2 days ago. Walmart, the largest employer, retail sales employer in the United States of America, and they said, okay, if you're going to force us into Obamacare and we've got to pay this tax, they said, and in Obamacare, it states that if a person works 29 hours or less in a given week, that the employer doesn't have to pay Obamacare. So Walmart came out 2 days ago. I was dumbfounded. And they said, all right, nobody but the executive personnel or the top people in Walmart, everybody else, we're going to put them on less than 30 hours per week. Unless you are management personnel at Walmart, you have just begun working less than 30 hours a week. Tell me anybody that can afford an apartment or make a house payment and an automobile and put the gas in that gas tank for less than 30 hours a week at Walmart pay. The same thing's going to happen to all of the fast food restaurants. And every bit of it is intentionally planned. I mean, this has been discussed behind closed doors. My elite friend knew it. The middle class is going to be taxed into oblivion. You've got numerous taxes after they get through talking about what they're going to do to the rich. They're going to literally do it to you. Then you've got Obamacare coming up. Then you've got debt creation of every kind imaginable. Did you realize that even the post office now has decided to do, 2 days ago I had a person to call in and say, we work for the post office. I was on a talk show and they said, the post office has just announced, I haven't heard it in the news yet, but they said the post office just announced, they said the message was just given to us, that the lesser employees who haven't been with the post office very long, they're going to cut them back to less than 30 hours per week. And the U.S. post office is the second largest employer in America apart from Walmart. And who is it that is going to hurt? The middle class is the one that's going to be affected by the forced debt creation. Now,
Lindsay, I'd just like to put in here, starting the 1st of January, 26 million Americans are going to start paying the alternative minimum tax. Now, the alternative minimum tax was sold to the American people as this was to be a tax on the rich. You know, the rich are not paying their fair share, and, oh, we've got to tax the rich. They've got to pay their fair share, so we're certainly, if they're not paying enough, they have a lot of deductions, and so we're going to come up with an alternative tax so that certainly if they're not paying their fair share, the rich are not paying what they should be paying, well, they're going to have to pay an alternative minimum tax. And basically, a lot of people went along with that. Oh, let's tax the rich. Well, what they did, they forgot to index that for inflation. And basically, as you know, there's been a planned program of inflation. They've destroyed the value of the 1913 dollar. The dollar today is worth about 4 cents of what it was back in 1913. I should say the dollar at that time would be worth So much more today. They've destroyed 96% of the value of our currency. Well, the alternative minimum tax went in about 1980, and they've destroyed two-thirds of the value of our currency since then. So now 26 million people are going to start paying an alternative minimum tax. People who thought it was all for the wealthy. Ladies and gentlemen, the wealthy are not going to be paying more taxes. They're going to find a way around it one way or the other. This whole idea of taxing the rich is to get the suckers to go along to support our courageous leaders who want to get the money from the rich. What it's going to do is eventually get down to the middle class. They want to wipe out the middle class. I think this is what Lindsay is saying. And there's no question. Whenever you hear these people talking about taxing the rich, understand they really want to raise your taxes. They want to take away your deductions. They want to take away your housing deduction, interest on your home. Perhaps a great deal of your charitable donations. They know what they're doing. They just don't want you to know the whole idea. Destroy the middle class. We'll be right back with Lindsay Williams. Lindsay, you go right ahead.
In 2009, I was on the telephone with my elite friend, and Dr. Stan, you know who he was back in those days before he passed away. And he made a statement that at the time I could not even begin to fathom what he was talking about. He said, and I said it on your program, Dr. Stan, so it's in the archives. He said, there's coming a time that you will be so broke, you will not be able to do anything about it. Now, I couldn't understand it then because America was in a great boom. The housing bust had not taken place yet. We were in great shape. He knew exactly. He saw, according to what he had heard behind closed doors, exactly what was going to happen. Now, I want to give you a formula. Yep. You are hearing me correctly. I want to give you a formula right now. I hope you have those pencils and paper handy because you can figure out yourself how long you, as the head of a household or the household, how long before you will be in a position where you will be so broke you will not be able to do anything about it. You ready? Here goes. We're down 3%. On September the 13th of 2012, Mr. Bernanke of the Federal Reserve said, we're going to take $40 billion every month and buy mortgage-backed securities from this month on, every month, indefinitely, automatically, as of the time that they pulled that first $40 billion out of thin air and bought mortgage-backed securities, the American dollar lost 3% of its purchasing power. Now, put down 3%. 3% per month, every month, as long as the Federal Reserve does that, and Mr. Bernanke just announced 2 or 3 days ago that they're going to continue it. Secondly, put down the word taxes. Now, Dr. Stan has just mentioned the alternative minimum tax. Then you've got the Obamacare tax. I think also as a result, what I'm hearing from my elite friend, that because of the physical cliff, there's going to be another tax you haven't even heard about yet. Now, put down taxes. Then put down Obamacare tax. Beginning approximately 12 months from now, you're going to have this tax done. Then, last time you went to the grocery store, were food prices going up? Yes, pretty much at a regular basis. Tack on that percentage of what you think food prices are going up. Then consider the fact that unless you are a management personnel, you're going to be cut back to 30 hours per week. All right, you ready? Let's add them up. You can take your calculator and figure it. 3%. The new tax that will be added on you, plus, as Dr. Stan just mentioned, then you've got Obamacare, then you've got food prices, then you've got the possibility of 30 hours a week. How long will it be? Now, please, you calculate this right there in your house. How long will it be before you can't afford to put food on the table, clothes on the back of the family, gas in the gas tank, pay the bills, and make your house mortgage payment at the same time? And when those children are crying because they're hungry, what is the one thing you're going to leave off? You can't leave off the gas in that gas tank because you have to go to work. You must put clothes on the back of that family or they'll freeze to death in the wintertime. You must put food on that table. What are you going to leave off? You are going to leave off paying the house mortgage payment, and that is exactly what they want. Are you catching this? Forced debt creation in order to bring about a new world order because they have depleted the purchasing power of the dollar to the point that you no longer can do everything you have to do and still pay the mortgage payment on the house. They come, after all, the Federal Reserve now has already bought the mortgage on your house. And that shopping
center. Hold that thought, Lindsay. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lindsay simply is saying that what they're going to do is wipe out the middle class, and basically, with the Obama tax, they're going to have to start paying that. And then, of course, we'll have the other taxes. We're going to have certainly inflation, the inflation rates running 7 to 9%. And then, of course, you're not going to be, or a lot of people are not going to be working full time. They're going to be working less than 30 hours a week. And basically, all of this is going to be progressively simply taking the money that people need just to live on. And probably many people are going to be in a position where they're not going to be able to make the monthly payments on their house. And as a result of that, more and more people are going to lose their homes. Will that be a fair appraisal, Lindsay?
Yes, and this is what they want. It's been planned behind closed doors. In fact, the gentleman in 2009, when he said made the statement to me, he said, you will be so broke you won't be able to do anything about it. You realize that they want you so broke that you can't afford to buy the airline ticket to go to that next meeting if they want to have to protest what the elite are doing right now. If things continue, this is what they have planned, and it's all a part. Now, let me make the next prediction based on what I'm seeing out there and what I'm hearing from my elite friend. The debt limit will be suspended.
Now, basically, what number will that be?
That will be number 1, 2, 3, 4, number... Five.
Number five, the debt limit will be suspended. So they can just keep increasing the debt as much as they want to.
As high as they'd like to make it go. They will just have a glorious time spending everybody else's money in a way that none of us have ever imagined that it could take place in America. You think you have a $16 trillion debt today. You haven't seen anything whenever they are given a free stroke of a pen to be able to do anything they want to do. And all of this is geared to one end goal.
And
please.
But this will result in basically you have to pay interest on your national debt. So basically pretty soon as the debt goes up higher to $20 trillion, to $25 trillion, to $30 to $40 trillion, pretty soon all the money that the government gets in has to be used to pay the interest on the national debt. And there's no money for Social Security, and there's no money for Medicare, and there's no money for food stamps. This is how you destroy a nation. And it would appear that's exactly what they want. Is it, Lindsay?
That's exactly what they want, and it happened last week. Yes, you heard me correctly. Last week you saw the next agenda take place. The dollar. You remember when I began tonight, I said the elite do not want to collapse yet, people. Your dollar still has a little purchasing power. And everything in this world that you can afford to do, you need to do it right now, immediately. In fact, you know, I make DVDs from time to time. We bought a whole professional camera outfit. We're doing everything we can to make ourselves sufficient, self-sufficient out of this system. Now, here comes the next agenda. The dollar will be phased out. Not yet, but the forced debt creation, all of these other things, the effect on the middle class, the devaluation formula I've given you, you can figure how long your household can survive with using this debt formula. Now, the dollar will be phased out. It happened last week. It was on the national news that our president had gone to Asia. You heard it? Oh, big news. He was taking his old entourage, and they were going over to the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, and 15 Asian nations were meeting. And he was going, oh, they made it a big deal for a number of days on the liberal media. And you didn't hear a word when you got back, did you? Isn't it amazing? Not one single media said anything about what the president accomplished in Asia. Why? He didn't accomplish anything. Let me tell you what happened. 15 Asian nations met. Now, please notice the immensity of this thing. These 15 Asian nations comprised one half of the world's population. They called it the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. And when our president got there, he said, we would like the United States of America to be a part of this. Why didn't you hear one peep out of the liberal media when he got back? They told him, go home, Mr. Obama. We don't want you. You're not even welcome at this summit. Get back on your 747 airplane and get back to America. And they thumbed their nose at America and completely left us out of the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. This happened last week. And when we come back after this break, I'll tell you exactly what did take place.
And ladies and gentlemen, people don't understand you're talking about China and India and Singapore and Hong Kong, Japan and South Korea and Malaysia. And these people do not want, certainly, our influence over there. They want to develop their own economy independent of ours. And basically, they're not going to put up with America telling them what to do. We're in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen. America is beginning to lose its influence throughout the world, and things are going to get a lot worse.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Lindsay, you go right ahead.
$3 billion. You heard me correctly. $3 billion. Asians said, Mr. Obama, you get back on your airplane and go straight home. And he was so embarrassed. And who did it include? South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, 33 billion Asians along with Japan and China and 15 Asian nations. And they sent him home with his tail between his legs. And he came back and the national media said not one word. Now, take one half of the world's population, please, you hear this carefully. One half of the world's population, as of last week, will no longer be using the American dollar as a reserve currency of the world or as the petrodollar, and the Chinese currency is going to be used in its place. What will happen to the American dollar? You say, Chaplain Williams, we heard you say that the American dollar was going to be dead by the end of the year. Well, folks, the American dollar is not going to be dead by the end of the year. The American dollar is already dead, and we've still got 3 days or 3 weeks left in the year yet. Did you know what happened with the BRICS agreement back in April the 5th of 2012 when Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa formed their group representing 43% of the world's population, 18% of the world's GDP, and 53% of the world's global financial capital, and they said, we aren't going to use the American dollar any longer now. This point, the agenda that I just gave you, can you see it? The dollar will be phased out over these 4 years of period so that the new world order can bring in their new world currency. You say, Chaplain Williams, is this encouraging? You better believe it is, because some of you out there still have some money that's stashed between the mattress or in the bank, and you've not used it yet. It still has purchasing power. And while it does, you use it. You buy those tangibles. Don't buy anything that you can't afford. Don't dare go into debt under any circumstances. But if you will understand what the elite are doing, you can be like many people in 1929 through 1933 who knew the Great Depression was coming. They got their finances in
order. Hold that thought, Lindsay. Hold the thought. We'll be back in a moment here. And, of course, Lindsay's making the point that out of this Southeast Asia conference that they had, certainly almost countries representing close to half of the population of the world have said we don't want to use the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And these countries are going to begin using their own currencies. There are going to be individual trade agreements between them. And Lindsay's point is that the dollar is already dead as the international means of exchange. Oh, it may be around nominally for a while, but it's certainly going to be destroyed and going to be replaced. And the difficulty is there's so many trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars out there that countries are holding, certainly as their reserve currencies. And once people begin to lose confidence, and believe me, they've already lost confidence in the American dollar, once they begin to dump those dollars because they've lost certainly lost confidence in them, those dollars are going to flood suddenly into our economy and going to be disastrous. Right now, our corporations are sitting on about $1.73 trillion. They're just not investing it. Our major banks are sitting on a couple of trillion dollars. They're not lending it out. They're holding it back. The only reason we don't have rampant inflation now is because the corporations are sitting on the money. They're part and parcel of what I call the brotherhood. The six major banks that control 70% of the financial assets of the United States are sitting on their money. They're lending it out. And because of that, we do not have rampant inflation. But when these countries throughout the world begin dumping those dollars into the market, well, that is the point where the whole house of cards comes down. And the vast majority of the American people who are in pensions, in annuities, in insurance policies, in bonds, and in anything that is mediated in dollars, at that point, of course, why, it's sayonara, you lose everything. And the average American has no idea what's coming down the line because they don't understand finance. Go right ahead, Lindsay. But before we do, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and get your material.
Dr. Stan, after I heard these agendas just after the election, I was so startled. We went in studio, and it took me 3 hours and 29 minutes on DVD. And this time, you've never seen anything so professionally done as we did. We actually had a studio in New York who does material for the national networks to produce this for us. And we've never done anything like this before. It cost a lot, but we did. We have one DVD series entitled The Next 4 Years. And when I got through with it, I couldn't stop. I said, wait a minute. I can't leave the American people here. I went back in studio with two of the most prominent financial professionals in America. You'll see them. And one of them is a Wall Street insider. And we went before camera, and we produced the DVD in which there is nothing but solutions. Did you hear this? We do not talk about any of the doom and gloom. We do not mention anything. I've already told the problems in the first DVD series of over 3 hours. The second DVD series is 2 hours and 50 minutes of nothing but solutions given by two of the top financial people of America. I give some solutions. There are two DVD series here. You have you've got right at 6 hours of DVD viewing, both telling the agendas. Please give a call to our number. We just released them, by the way, this on Wednesday. They'll be shipped out, the first ones this coming week. Please give a call to our toll-free number. Toll-free number is 888-799-6111, and we do have the operator standing by 24 hours a day because of this new release, or go on the web to prophecyclub.com, prophecyclub.com, or toll-free 1-888-799-6111. I need to go fast. I must get in some more things here. I want you to notice three factions that my elite have told me are out there right now that are so important. Number one, this would be about the 7th to 8th agenda. There is the old-fashioned elite, the ones that you have now known about for years. Secondly, they have now in the White House a president who double-crossed the elite numerous times in his first administration, didn't let the pipeline go across Canada, put in the Dodd-Frank bill, which they didn't want. He also would not open up public lands for exploration for oil. They know that this man is out of control. He is like a bull in a china shop. Even the elite are very concerned about Obama since he's gotten back in. Then thirdly, you have a new renegade elite. You're catching this. You haven't heard this anywhere. I just got it the other day. The elite are calling it a renegade elite. That's the exact word they use for me, renegade elite. What are they? It's like this Phnom Penh group that I mentioned a moment ago, and like the BRICS group. They are bucking what the New World Order is doing, and it is concerning the elite. As a result, you have three factions, and who is caught in the middle of the fist fight that's going on between these factions? You, as a middle class of America, are caught right in the middle of that barroom fight between the elite, Mr. Obama, and the renegade elite, and you're the ones that will hurt most. Please, I must go fast.
Would you mind just going over what is the renegade elite again?
The renegade elite is like this Phnom Penh group, which includes one half of the world's population,
and they're going to
use Chinese currency instead of the reserve currency of the world or the petrodollar any longer. Or it's like the BRICS group that formed, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and likewise said we would not use the American dollar any longer. And the expression that was given to me is renegade elite is the exact words they used, and it's got the elite very concerned. Okay, I need to give you another one here. Right now, 38% of the people in the United States of America receive some sort of money from the government every month, whether it be Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, whether it be food stamps, welfare, or maybe you work for the government, you get a paycheck for your work, or you have maybe a retirement fund. 38% of every American receives some sort of remuneration. I won't give you a figure. Mark my words, put it down beside your calendar. By the end of 4 years, and there is an agenda to put 70% of every person in the United States of America on some sort of remuneration from the federal government. I have a prediction based on what my elite friend told me. There will never be another honest election in the United States of America. Did you catch that? Why? Because whoever signs that paycheck for 70% of the Americans who are getting something in the way of a remuneration from the government every month, they will vote for the person who signs that paycheck. We have just had our last honest election if the elite and Mr. Obama have their way. Now,
I'm not so sure, Lindsay. I'm not so sure this was an honest election because, as you and I both know, certainly many people within the Trilateral Commission didn't want Obama elected. You certainly thought that he was going to lose, and I really thought he was going to lose because I read what Mortimer Zuckerman, member of the Trilateral Commission, member of the CFR, certainly the publisher of a U.S. News and World Report, reading what he had said. He'd backed Obama 4 years ago, and he was markedly against Obama, and certainly he, I think, represents the Trilateral Commission. They didn't want Obama elected. Obama did get elected, and I don't think he was honestly elected at all. I think it was a rigged election. It doesn't matter how people vote. It's who counts the votes. It's important, and that's what really happened. I think that the elite is very unhappy with Mr. Obama right now. In fact, if I were him, I certainly would never take a trip to Dallas. In fact, I honestly do not believe he's going to last for 4 years, but you go right ahead.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Dr. Stan. I wouldn't dare say it on somebody else's program, but you can. You know, the elite, they think they're God, but they really aren't. They don't always get their way. And you're right. From the gentleman who you know that you talk with, I have never heard him so angry as when he's talking about the elite right now. Okay, let me give you gold prices. I've only got a moment or two. I got to go through one, two or more of these. Gold prices, 2008, when Mr. Obama took office, it for the first time, they were $800 an ounce. This is history. This is fact. 2012, they're $1,700 and a few dollars over this morning. 2016, I told you back 3-4 years ago, it's in Dr. Stan's archives, that my elite friend had told me that the currency of the elite is gold and silver, not paper. They only have just enough paper that they can maintain their businesses, but their personal wealth is in gold, and most of it stored offshore. By 2016, I predict, based on what they have told me, that you will see gold prices $3,000 an ounce, and I am begging you again to please take advantage, because it can save the purchasing power of your household, because it's the only thing that will maintain value. Now, there's one expression many years ago that was given to me by Mr. Fromm. We were in a conversation one day, And he used an expression, whether he meant to or not, or whether he slipped or not, I'm not quite sure, but he used an expression, devil's messiah. And I've been a pastor for 57 years, either of a church or a missionary in Alaska or out there on the radio or wherever it may be, witnessing for the Lord. This really moves me and bothers me. The devil's messiah agenda for the next 4 years' time is very active. And who is it going to affect? You heard me say early in the program that there's going to be forced debt creation. And one of the factors that they are factoring into this are the churches of America. You have a mortgage on your church. Most churches do have a mortgage. You must get rid of it immediately. That church that has a mortgage on it, you are going to lose it. Why? It is a part of the devil's messiah program of the elite to repossess your church and tell your pastor what to preach. You remember, now please, pastors, I'm pleading with you. I'm pleading with you as a pastor with the pastor's heart. You remember that I told you back years ago when this expression was first used to me that it was a buzzword expression. The elite themselves of the internal, they know what it is. And it was basically said to me, we must remove the God from America that made America great before we can bring it into the New World Order. I said they were going to move it from Congress. They were going to remove it from the Supreme Court. They had to take it out of the classroom. You don't hear Merry Christmas anymore. You hear Happy Holidays. Oh, my goodness, people, aren't you getting the message of what they're doing to you? They have destroyed the existence. They think that they have destroyed your ability to remember the God of George Washington and the God of our founders who gave them, I believe, that great document, the Constitution of the United States of America. And they must remove every semblance of that God from society before they can bring in their New World Order. And in the next four-year period, one of the agendas of the elite is to make it so that your church members won't have enough money to give like they've been giving in the past. And when your church cannot make that mortgage payment, they intend to repossess that church building and tell your pastor what to preach. It is a part of the devil's messiah program of one of their agendas. The other day I was talking with a pastor that I love dearly. I'm not going to mention his name. I have great respect for him. And we were talking about what's going to happen because he realizes that the predictions the elite have made to me in the past have happened. And the first thing he said when we talked about the future, he said, well, Chaplain, what's going to happen to my pension? I said, Pastor, now listen, this is a prediction based on what I've heard. Any pastor that's 50 years of age or younger, you'll never get your pension. No. Your pension is into stocks and to bonds and paper. And you're not going to get your pension. They want your church also. And it is a part of the devil's messiah program to bring that in over these next 4 years' time. I am pleading with you. I beg of you. Pay off the mortgage on that church building at any price and don't build another building with a mortgage on it. If you do, the elite are going to own it. Do you want them to get it and all the money that your church people have put into it? If I was a pastor, I wouldn't. Okay, one more. Millions, I wish I didn't have to say this one. Millions of Muslims, it is scheduled to bring them into the United States of America. Now, this is not the elite's agenda. The elite have told me, I wish you could see the emails I've been getting recently from the gentleman you know, Dr. Stan. The elite know that Mr. Obama intend to do this, and so I'm telling you what they've told me, that Mr. Obama's agenda is to bring millions of Muslims into America and give them citizenship. Why do you think he's pushing this thing about illegal aliens coming in from the south and across the border and swimming the river? That's not the issue. He wants to make it so that in this second administration, he can bring in millions of Muslims, give them citizenship, and introduce Sharia law in the United States of America, and in so doing, nullify the Constitution of the United States of America. One more and I'll quit. You've got to be your own doctor. The Medicare system is going to be for the few, and you must learn how to take care of yourself. Dr. Stan, if the people out in the audience are your age and mine, they don't even want us around in the first place. But oftentimes the other medical care is going to be selective to those that they want it to go to. People, we have put up on lindseywilliams.net, we have put up a special section of health only. I tell you everything you can do to take care of your cardiovascular disease. I'm not selling a product for me. I don't make anything off of this. I'm putting up there what I have found works. And you go to it if you'd like. You never have to have a heart attack. You never need a stroke. You never have to have a heart bypass. There is a way for you to, the number one killer in America is cardiovascular. Secondly, you must build that immune system. If your immune system is strong enough, it can overcome every known disease. We are going to be posting things in a special section in lindseywilliams.net whereby you can be your own doctor, take care of yourself. When Obamacare comes in, you go to the emergency room and you wait for 24 hours because you can get service, because 40% of the medical professionals in America, as has just been told me by David Johnda, who's a very prominent doctor, still practicing and spoke before Congress. He also has a daily radio broadcast every day, and he says 40% of the medical practitioners in America are going to quit when Obamacare comes in. And if you think that you're going to get medical service from that point on, you are sadly mistaken. You must be your own doctor in light of the agendas that they have planned. Dr. Stan, I've given to you only in a overview quickly 10 agendas of the elite in the next 4 years' time. We take 3 hours and 29 minutes to do it and explain it in detail. And Dr. Stan, thank you for allowing me the privilege to be here to say these things tonight.
Well, I think it's vitally important, ladies and gentlemen, to realize that the America we have known has been destroyed. It's been destroyed because the good people have allowed it to happen, but mainly because, of course, our churches have been infiltrated. They infiltrated the seminaries, and they gave the ministers an introduction to a different type of music. The wonderful old hymns that, of course, were the foundation of Christianity, we seldom sing them, or if we do, why we have all these rock and roll and the songs with a rhythm and you just almost want to dance, that's fine, but not in a church. And then they've changed the message to the church. We never talk about fear of God. We never talk about the fact that God brings his vengeance upon a nation that does evil things. We never find our ministers speaking out against the policy, the official government policy of torture. And certainly at the slaughter of people, that's why this fellow Manning, the homosexual, got into so much trouble and why they tortured him for 900 days. Because he told the truth about all the Iraqi civilians who were killed intentionally. Well, Lindsay, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Dr. Stan, I hope every listener in your audience will set their spiritual house in order. This is the most important thing you can possibly do. Don't lose sleep over this. The one thing that is an agenda, I told you back in the video that I did, 2012, the beginning of the end, that one of the agendas in 2012 was to instill fear. And if at all possible, they're going to do it through the physical cliff, through all the other things they're doing. Don't allow it to happen. If you will take action on what the elite have told me that you have heard about tonight, you can spare your house heartache. You can win. You don't have to suffer to the extent that the majority of the world is going to suffer. And the elite are doing all of this for the purpose of getting you and the entire country and the currency of this country to the point where you will be willing to beg for a new currency, to beg to give up your constitution in order to get the New World Order's serenity, which will be a total control. The name of the game is control. All of this is planned, and they know exactly what they're doing. They cannot succeed. They must not win. I believe that there's a way around this. I don't know what it's going to be, but we need divine intervention, and we need to pray for it and ask the Lord for it. So in light of what you've heard tonight, first of all, realize you've still got some purchasing power in that dollar. Go and pay off that house mortgage. I'd rather live in a log cabin with a paid-for roof over my head than a $1 million mansion with a mortgage on it, knowing what's going to happen in the financial world and if the elite would someday take over that mortgage. You can win and be victorious if you will only take action, but you need to take this to heart. Don't just fluff it off. And it's not all doom and gloom. a lot of this is encouraging, because if you know what they're doing to the middle class, for instance, you can right now begin doing something about, for instance, if you were a farmer and you wanted an alternative currency, what would you use? You would use the farm products. If you were a dairy owner, what would you use? You'd use your milk and your butter. You can figure out an alternative method of currency without using paper, which is going to be taxed to death. If you were a rancher, you could use the cattle. If you were a city person, you can use the gold and silver that you bought at $800 an ounce. There are so many ways that if you will have a mindset change, and this is the reason for our second DVD series.
Well, Lindsay, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Good night.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Lindsay Williams, and we hope you enjoyed the conversation with him. And certainly I want to tell you that as of the 1st of January, the federal government is going to withdraw pennies and nickels from circulation. Let me repeat that. As of the 1st of January, the federal government is going to start withdrawing pennies and nickels from circulation. You're just not going to be able to get them, certainly, and they're going to pull them out and melt them on down, because, of course, there's a 6 cents. Cost 6 cents to make a penny and 16 cents to make a nickel. They've destroyed the value of our currency, and this is part of the program of certainly impoverishing and enslaving the American people. Now, we actually have a DVD that Lindsay Williams did for us, going into the background of what's going on, the energy non-crisis, and you need, of course, to call us at 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the DVD with Lindsay Williams. We have another, certainly, DVD with Ron Brown as a frequent guest here. He sells gold and silver coins, but he's talking about the bond market, and its relationship to the financial market. So you need to get Lindsay Williams' DVD and Ron Brown's DVD. And then a couple of talks we gave 5 or 6 years ago. One was the financial tsunami. The other is the financial Armageddon. And certainly you can get them with the syllabuses, and they will explain to you what is happening financially. Because if you don't make preparations right now, most people, of course, are going to be totally destroyed and totally impoverished here in the coming weeks and months and the next year or two, as they destroy intentionally and purposely the value of our currency. Now, they're going to keep us going probably for another couple of years as they consolidate the control of the world. But you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, there are other forces at work. Certainly, there's China and India and Hong Kong and Singapore and Malaysia and Indonesia that have set up a separate bloc in competition with the United States, and they're going to be using a different currency. And then, of course, God has a plan, too, and certainly he can circumvent all of the plans of what we call the Brotherhood of Darkness. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I will tell you we're moving into another war, whether it's going to be a minor war over there in the Middle East, or is it going to be World War III? World War III is coming. There's no question World War III is coming, because we're toppling all of the existing governments over there and turning them over to the Muslim Brotherhood, which, of course, will impose governments under Sharia law. Why would we do that? To create the best enemy money could buy, so you can have a war. Just exactly as American corporations financed Adolf Hitler and American banks financed Adolf Hitler. And fortunately, you can check all of these things on the internet. Who was the major financier for Adolf Hitler? 10 American banks, and then the Rothschilds and the Jewish bankers. Why would the Jewish bankers be blocking or be financing Adolf Hitler? Well, because, of course, these were labor Zionist Jews, and they hate Jews. They wanted, of course, to create a situation out of the horror of the Holocaust where the Jews would be willing to go to the Holy Land, and that's what it was all about. They didn't care how many Jews were killed, as long as there were enough left to begin to populate the Holy Land. That was their plan. And, of course, this was why they backed Adolf Hitler. If it hadn't been for the Holocaust, you think the Jews would have given up their comfortable lives in Europe? And, of course, the Nazis were financed by Brown Brothers Harriman. Brown Brothers Harriman, and, of course, on the board of that was a man named Prescott Bush. He was actually indicted following World War II for his financing of the enemy, and then there was another man named George Herbert Walker. For George Herbert Walker, Bush was named. You need to verify this, the book, America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus. America's Nazi Secret by John Loftus. You need to get it and read it or hear our 4-CD set of my interviews with John Loftus entitled The War Against the Jews. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. You can go there, listen to our programs. A lot of the DVDs we talk about, many of them are posted there. You can watch them. We'd like you to get them, but if you don't, just watch them, and then please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg and those of you who were listening last hour to Lindsay Williams, as he laid out certainly what he's been told by a gentleman he refers to as Mr. X, who I have personally talked to in the past. Why, of course, says that I think that Lindsay is recounting exactly what he's heard. But I would point out that God certainly is a major player in everything that's going on. And even though the elite, the David Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the other people who are involved in this worldwide occult organization, or as David Rockefeller refers to it as, a secret cabal. And incidentally, Barry Goldwater, if you read his book With No Apologies, which we do carry, on page 280 talks about this group and refers to it as a cabal, a secret cabal. Get Barry Goldwater's book, we carry that on page 280. Barry Goldwater refers to the Trilateral Commission as a cabal. And of course, if you read David Rockefeller's book, page 405, he calls it a secret cabal and readily admits that he is part of this secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, conspiring with others throughout the world to bring about a more global economic and political system. They know exactly what they're doing. They just figured that you would never bother to read David Rockefeller's memoirs. Of course, when Glenn Beck actually quoted from that page 405 of David Rockefeller's memoirs, very soon Glenn Beck was out of a job. However, you can get David Rockefeller's memoirs. We carry them. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We carry Barry Goldwater's very important book, With No Apologies, and certainly you want to read the chapter on America's unelected rulers. And that's page 280 there. Really, I think it's page 274. To the end of the chapter, one of the most important chapters you will ever read, going into the people who really run America today. But, of course, you can only understand them by going to their website, the Trilateral Commission website at trilateral.org, and certainly looking at their logo, the Trilateral Commission logo at trilateral.org, and their three curved arrows. And if you look carefully at the inside of them, you could almost imagine that they're three sixes. But there's no question that they're bound together in the center by an upside-down broken cross, an ancient symbol of the mystery religions. William Grigg, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
And who are we going? What are we going to be talking about today?
We're of necessity going to have to talk about some of the things you touched on in terms of the influence of these secretive power elite groups and the fact that a lot of what they have been doing for decades or a century or longer covertly is now being done openly. But one of the things I find really interesting about the way the public is being manipulated over the so-called fiscal cliff is the fact that the Obama administration is blatantly promoting the idea, first of all, of unlimited money printing, or what they call stimulus. Secondly, they've dropped the idea that some kind of spending cuts will be part of the package. And third, they're demanding that the president be given unilateral authority to raise the debt ceiling without the involvement of Congress, which would sort of consummate the deal of nullifying entirely the Congress's constitutional role in terms of the power of the purse. It's really pretty dangerous what they're discussing, and it's the culmination of what these secretive groups have been pushing for a century or longer.
And of course, basically, the best way to destroy a nation, well, you can destroy it from an invasion from without, but if you can destroy its currency, you can destroy that nation from within. John Adams wrote about that, warned about that. The way to never allow them to destroy your currency, and yet we've allowed it. William, you go right ahead.
It's really interesting for me, in the course of what little spare time I have, when I'm exposed to some of the outlets for the contending varieties of collectivism you find in the media. We, in my family, as a matter of a lifestyle choice, don't have cable television, something we really can't afford to have, and if we could afford to have it, we wouldn't want to have it, on account of the fact that there's very little of use that would justify the expense. Granted, there are some things and some of the educational channels I quite like. I liked the History Channel before it became an undisguised and unqualified conduit for propaganda, particularly war propaganda. But there are some things that I enjoy in terms of the cooking shows, the nature shows. I enjoy watching shows about animals, things of that sort. The cable, of course, is this huge apparatus for poisoning the public mind in the direction of collectivism, particularly when you're talking about Fox News and MSNBC, which are each of them in its distinctive way equally contemptible, and they're both doing exactly the same thing. They're playing to a given constituency, a contending variety, two different contending varieties of collectivism. Fox News tends to be more nationalistic and more inclined toward what is called big government conservatism, which is not an oxymoron. Unfortunately, there is that strain of what we'd have to call conservatism that relishes the aggrandizement of government, particularly when you're talking about the military and the police apparatus. MSNBC, of course, is promoting unfiltered Marxist propaganda. And they're both involved in a process that has been called, and I'm about to use a really fancy word, epistemic closure. Let me define that quickly. Epistemology is the study of knowledge, how we know things, how we process reality, how it is that we know something. It becomes a really abstract field. But if you're talking about epistemology, you're talking about knowledge. Epistemic closure refers to the idea of being part of a group that is defined entirely by reinforcing established prejudices. So if you're dealing, for instance, with a classic cult of some sort where they manage information, or totalitarian societies such as North Korea, where the state obviously is in charge of every conduit of information and it's all directed toward glorifying the dear leader and upholding the party in all things, that's a classic example of what is called epistemic closure, because people do not have access to legitimate forms of knowledge outside of what the party or the self-appointed leadership of a given society or a given cult would define. And MSNBC and Fox News are involved in exactly the same racket. This afternoon I happened to spend some time at a location where I was immersed for about 45 minutes.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. William was just saying that this afternoon, while he had spent some time, about 45 minutes immersed in, and
yes.
What were you immersed in?
I was immersed in the onslaught of Marxist and cultural Marxist propaganda from MSNBC. And it really is the photographic negative of what you get from Fox News. They're talking about the same subjects. They're playing exactly the same card out of the same deck. The difference is one is dealing from the red cards, the other is dealing from the black cards. The red cards, of course, would be Marxist. The black cards would be totalitarian nationalist, and they would be, of course, MSNBC on the Marxist side and Fox News on the nationalist side. They're 180 degrees opposed because, on the one hand, you had Fox News during the Bush administration extolling the dear leader and execrating everybody who dared to challenge him. And now in the era of Obama, you've got MSNBC doing the same thing, quite shamelessly so. Obama met with some of the leading leading television personalities from MSNBC a few days ago, such dubious worthies as Al Sharpton and Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz. They were summoned to the White House to get talking points and marching orders with respect to the so-called middle class tax cut preservation. In other words, they're given marching orders to flog incessantly the idea that unless Mr. Obama gets what he is demanding, which is a radical increase on the amount of money that the government can steal from the productive, defined here as the wealthy, and they always talk about millionaires and billionaires. For some reason in his universe, that category begins with people earning $200,000 a year. And so the theme that they're promoting is that unless taxes are raised on this group of people, that all kinds of rack and ruin will ensue because Mr. Obama will allow the middle class tax cuts to be abolished beginning on January 1st, and we're presented with the supposedly terrifying prospect of sequestration, which will be spending cuts. They're trying to avoid the spending cuts. They're trying to raise taxes.
I think it's so interesting, though, because they can say, we're not going to raise taxes. We're just going to take away all the deductions. I mean, yeah. You have a home, you have to pay interest on the home. That's deductible. Well, we're not going to allow that now. And then what about giving to charitable institutions? Well, we're going to limit the amount that you can give. And basically, of course, what they're going to do is go through the interest you have. You're paying interest on this, that, or the other thing. Interest will no longer be deductible. They're going to do away with deductions. Ladies and gentlemen, they say one thing, they mean another. What they really mean is a massive increase, certainly on the level of money that people put in. And they say, we're not going to increase the tax rates. We're going to keep the tax cuts there. We're just going to get more money. And you do that simply by changing the whole structure of the tax situation. Ladies and gentlemen, basically, Barack Hussein Obama has actually increased the federal debt of the United States almost $5.5 trillion, from $10.7 trillion when he came into office to where it is today, over $16.3 trillion, and very soon will be $16.4 trillion. They want to just keep increasing the debt. But as you increase the debts, certainly you have to borrow the money. You have to pay interest on the money you borrow. And right now the interest rates are low, but sooner or later they're going to have to go up. And
yeah.
When they do, certainly at one point you get to the point where literally all the money that the federal government can extract from the people through taxation will have to go to pay interest on the debt. This is what had happened to ancient Rome. They bankrupted themselves with bread and circuses. And here, of course, it would be food stamps and football, but go right ahead.
That is a really provocative parallel. And, of course, another thing that we must remember from the Roman experience is that they overextended the imperial perimeter and allowed of their internal defenses to decay to the point where by the late 3rd century they're depending entirely on German mercenaries to guard the historic borders of what they would call the homeland, what I guess in our context we'd call the homeland. And so they had hauled themselves out financially and culturally, left themselves at the mercy of mercenaries of no particular loyalty to defend the frontiers of their country, and they had expanded the arc of their military entanglements to the point where they simply collapsed. It's a little bit like taking a baseball bat and crushing a spider from above. Once you crush the body, the head of the body, the spider, the legs fold inward. That sort of thing happened in Rome, if you will. I can see the same thing happening to us. But the other really potent parallel here with Rome has to do with the fact that you have the imperial branch, the imperial executive branch, I should say, of this country behaving like its Roman predecessor. We do have the vestigial remnant of what defines as Madison pointed out, what defines a republican order of government, which is the primacy of the legislative branch, that branch which is most accountable to the people in whose name it rules. And we have the Obama administration here not only promoting unabashed class warfare in classic Marxist classic Marxist themes and tropes, which is what you're getting from MSNBC in particular, but you also have them demanding that the president be given the power to raise the debt ceiling unilaterally. And what that would mean, of course, is that Congress would no longer have any leverage at all in terms of limiting, however temporarily and however hypocritically, what can be borrowed in the name of the full faith and credit of the United States government. So you have the Federal Reserve proposing QE infinity, quantitative easing for the foreseeable future, which is infinite inflation in principle. And on the other hand, you got the president essentially saying that he'll be in charge of the power of the purse, he'll be in charge of the budget, which is not his to give. And due to the fact that there is this principle in the Constitution that does not permit the legislative branch to alienate its powers to the executive, you've got a situation where you'd either have to dispense with the pretense that the Constitution means something, or you have to deny what the president is after. So we really are on the threshold here, what we would call the, in a full and final sense, the repudiation of any pretense that we're a constitutional republic. And couple that with what happened in, I believe, March or April of 2011, when Mr. Obama decided that he was going to commit the United States to war in Libya, and he did so in a way that didn't involve Congress at all. He had the Arab League, he and Hillary Clinton had the Arab League enact a resolution calling on the UN Security Council to create a no-fly zone over Libya that would be enforced with the aid, the central role, really, of the United States government by way of the NATO alliance. Then he had the Security Council meet and approve a resolution calling for a no-fly zone over Libya, and before Congress could even be called back into session, you had the United States fully engaged in a war of aggression to remove a one-time CIA asset by the name of Muammar Gaddafi from power. This is done in a way that not only didn't involve Congress in terms of a declaration of war or even some kind of a resolution pursuant to the War Powers Act, which, although constitutionally spurious, would involve Congress in some way. In this case, Congress wasn't involved at all. And so you have really, both in foreign and domestic policy, the idea that everything that the president does, desires to do, he can do, that there is no institutional limit or accountability to what a president can do. And you have the same kind of thing happening under George W. Bush, but as in so many other ways, Mr. Obama has taken from the example of Mr. Bush and expanded upon it. And tonight, there's discussion in the wire services about the possibility that Mr. Obama will have a completely private swearing-in ceremony the day before the public inaugural, and the public inaugural will be largely an event closed off in terms of public access, that it will be sponsored by the corporate and banking interests that own Mr. Obama. And I'm trying to figure out why he's being so blunt and brazen in asserting what he is and what we have discussed in terms of his real nature, which is that he's very much a product of the Wall Street interests. He's very much a product of the CIA. That's something that Wayne Madsen documented, is that at every critical stage in Mr. Obama's background and development, his mother and other people who were his handlers were connected to the CIA, which, contrary to a lot of people's perceptions, has always been involved in promoting subversion rather than gathering intelligence. But now we have a situation where he would have a swearing-in ceremony in private, not witnessed by anybody representing the public, and then a public inaugural that would be run almost entirely by corporate banking interests. And so we're already in a phase right now where the pretense is being dropped that Mr. Obama is anything other than an elected dictator, and he tends to rule as such. And the heraldic chorus that MSNBC, of course, is treating this as a good, wonderful thing. One of the refrains they were chanting today was that, after all, he ran on a platform, you know, calling for increased taxes on the rich, and that means that he now has the power to impose them. Well, no, he doesn't, because as the Constitution defines things, it is the House of Representatives where revenue bills must begin. But if you have Mr. Obama in charge of defining what the debt ceiling is, then really Congress can't do anything in terms of limiting what can be spent. And so they're trying to make, I think, the most radical structural adjustments in the nature of the power of the presidency and the office of the presidency that we have seen since the reign of our first fascist president for life, who is, of course, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And on this day, we're remembering, at least some of us are remembering, the 71st anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, which was something that was brought about in large measure because of Mr. Roosevelt's chicanery. As a friend of mine recently wrote in an article commemorating this terrible anniversary, Hawaii was surprised by that attack, but Roosevelt most certainly was not.
And let me just comment, if anybody would like to see, I went through Colonel House's papers back at Yale University some years ago. I actually found that the Secretary of War Stimson's diary was there, so I went over and I went through that, and certainly Secretary of War Stimson at the time of Pearl Harbor certainly was a key figure, and basically in his diary he tells on for the 25th of November, he said, you know, we went to the White House and certainly the visit with the President, there were only five of us there, so Secretary of State, pardon me, Secretary of the Army, a Marshal and Knox and one other person, and Stimson, the President. And President Roosevelt said, well, I think that the Japanese are probably going to attack next Monday. You know, they always want to have a surprise attack. The only question is, what we want to do is get into this war and get the Japanese to fire the first shot. That was November 25th. I have it. You're welcome to get a free copy of it. But they don't want the American people to know. Go right ahead, William. I think it's so distressing to realize they left those boys there to die,
yeah,
just exactly as they left the people in the Twin Towers to die. They wanted an excuse to get us into a war with terrorism. They wanted an excuse to get America into a war, the Second World War, with Japan and with the Nazis. Go right ahead.
That's something that they have been lusting after for a number of years, and the long, I don't know if suppressed is the right word, long-deferred memoirs of President Hoover dealing with World War II were published about a year ago. And there's an extensive discussion, well-documented in this very long book, describing the way in which the Roosevelt administration deliberately cultivated the worst interests within the Japanese government through selective diplomacy, first by economic warfare, by slapping on an embargo that they knew would make things intolerable for the Japanese. And granted, the Japanese government was horrible. The militarists were bloodthirsty and utterly impenitent pagan butchers. If you take a look at the horrible things they did in Manchukuo, that is to say, occupied Manchuria, they were easily the peer competitors of the Nazis and the communists in terms of the way they treated people. So it's not as if that was a benign government that went bad because of American influence. Of course, if you need to walk back the story of the narrative a little bit on that front, too, because it was the duplicitous diplomacy of the first President Roosevelt when he was conducting the negotiations for the Port Arthur Treaty, which ended the war between Japan and Russia, that involved the same kind of sneak attack on Russia that eventually would take place against American forces in 1941. Mr. Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, won a Nobel Peace Prize for that negotiation, for bringing an end to the Russian-Japanese War, but there were secret pacts secretly concluded between Washington and Japan in which Japan was going to be treated essentially as a subcontractor of Washington and London in that part of Asia and the Pacific, and they were given an invitation to occupy Korea, and of course that created a horrible situation where the Koreans were under the boot heel of Japan for a number of decades, and that situation that has never fully been reconciled. There are still very long and very bitter memories on the part of the Koreans of the period of Japanese occupation. But the idea that Teddy Roosevelt was promoting was that Japan would become sort of an imperial cat's paw in that part of the world. And it was the posture of the Roosevelt administration that they wanted to promote the militarist element within Japan. And one of the things that happened is that after the Japanese began to feel their oats in the late 1920s, early 1930s, is that they began to fill the measure of their intended role in ways perhaps the Washington didn't fully understand or anticipate. But during the negotiations in the summer of 1941, when there were some conciliatory elements within the Japanese government, were trying to find peaceful ways of reconciling differences with Washington, Roosevelt went out of his way to stiff-arm them, to alienate them, to cut them off from diplomatic contact, and that meant, of course, that the more militarist elements that I just referred to became more salient. That was because Roosevelt wanted to create a problem to justify his preferred solution, which was the back door to war in the European theater. And Japan, by this time, of course, was an ally of Nazi Germany. It was seen that once the attack on Pearl Harbor, which was anticipated and planned for by Roosevelt and by Marshall and by other despicable people of that ilk, once that was...
Hold that thought, William. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly William is simply talking about the fact that the President Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II. He wanted to get us into war with the Germans, but the Germans would not do anything to provoke a war. So he did everything he could to get the Japanese to provoke the attack, and certainly by putting an embargo on them, certainly they couldn't even buy oil. Japan had no oil. They had a fleet. They had all sorts of warships, but they had no oil, and we put an embargo on them so they couldn't buy oil to make gasoline or diesel fuel. They couldn't buy it anywhere in the world, and basically Japan had no alternative but to attack. That we had already declared war on Japan, but we can't let the American people know that, or the fact that President Roosevelt had told the people in the White House, and I have Secretary of War Stimson's diary, the pages from it, on the 25th, he told them the attack is coming probably next Monday, and the only question is how we're going to get into the war and get the Japanese to fire the first shot. Why? Because they wanted to get the American people behind it. Exactly the same thing. They used a phony excuse to get us into the war, certainly in Vietnam, and they did, pardon me, the phony Gulf of Tonkin instance, it didn't occur. And we lost 58,000 men because of a lie. And then, of course, we got into the war there, certainly with Iraq and Afghanistan, because the lie of the Twin Towers coming down. But, ladies and gentlemen, that was controlled demolition. All you need to do is watch Building 7 come down half a dozen times. Notice how the center of the roof collapses first. That's what you do with a controlled demolition. Watch Building 7 come down, the center of the roof collapses, so the walls will fall in, then you take out the base of the building, and it collapses in its shadow. That's a controlled demolition. There's 1,600 architects and engineers have joined the Architects for Engineers for 9/11 Truth, pointing out that certainly the Twin Towers and Building 7 were controlled demolitions, 1,600 of them. You'll never hear that mentioned at all on ABC, CBS, no, or NBC. So they got us into the war on terrorism, and now we have to have certainly every one of our telephone calls has to be monitored to protect us from those wicked terrorists who are trying to take away our freedom. The only trouble is we're financing those wicked terrorists. There's only 50 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Only 50 members of Al-Qaeda. We have, certainly that's still 60,000 American troops, 100,000 contractors, about 40,000 NATO troops, about 300,000 Afghan army and police force. We're paying for the whole thing, and 50 members of Al-Qaeda. And if you doubt that, please go to your website and type in Afghanistan, 50 members Al-Qaeda. Afghanistan, 50 members of Al-Qaeda. And ask yourself, why do we need all those troops over there when there are only 50 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan? Go right ahead, William.
That's, of course, a question of the sort that is not suitable to be discussed in the respectable avenues of discourse. And it underscores the similarities you pointed out, Dr. Stan, between what happened during the Pearl Harbor and after the Pearl Harbor attack, that false flag attack. It was a genuine flag. I mean, the Japanese were flying their flag when they attacked American flagged forces in Pearl Harbor, but it was a false flag attack in the sense that it was not a sneak attack. It was anticipated. It was intended. It was something that was a joint production of the Imperial Japanese government and the FDR administration, and the victims, of course, were the American troops and sailors in Pearl Harbor, and eventually the United States, the entire population thereof, during the war. But what's happened as well with the so-called war on terror is that in recent weeks, the Obama administration has suggested that they might want to move away from that framework for the conflict and start talking about it in different terms, but at the same time, we see another backdoor-to-war type dynamic emerging with respect to Syria just in the last few days. The Obama administration, by way of anonymous leaks to compliant media, has claimed that the admittedly horrible regime of Bashar Assad is preparing a chemical weapons attack in Syria, but at the same time, we could find that it's those elements of the Syrian rebellion, the so-called resistance, which is composed of people who have been armed and trained and equipped by Qatar and Saudi Arabia with the help of the United States government. Those are the people who have been testing nerve agents. In other words, it is that faction of this conflict that is supported by Washington that is actually preparing for the use of nerve gas or other chemical agents. If this happens, you've got a false flag attack that would cross the proverbial red line and provide a pretext for military invasion into Syria, which itself would be sort of a backdoor for the long-anticipated war with Iran that would be catastrophic for the region and for the entire world.
But, William, have you noticed nobody ever asked, where did Assad get his chemical weapons? Why,
exactly.
He got them from Saddam Hussein. Where did Saddam Hussein get his chemical weapons? They were built by corporations called Bechtel. And of course, headed by George Shultz from the Trilateral Commission, and certainly helped along by Donald Rumsfeld of the Trilateral Commission. Bechtel built the chemical weapons that Saddam had that he used to kill 1 million Iranians and 100,000 Kurds, and nobody ever talks about it. William, you go right ahead.
It's important to remember, and I'm glad that you bring this up consistently, that the chemical weapons arsenal that was built by Saddam Hussein was built with the active involvement of the United States, with corporate interests that are close to the United States government. And we have to remember that it was 19 years ago this month that Saddam Hussein greeted the future defense secretary of the United States in a ceremony in the palace there. Mr. Rumsfeld, Donald Rumsfeld, was acting as a personal envoy. He was, I believe, at the time out of government. He was a personal envoy of Ronald Reagan. He shook Saddam Hussein's hand. And at that point, they were transacting business between Washington and Baghdad in the context of a war against Iran in which Saddam was the aggressor, and it was an aggression against Iran that had been planned and supported by the United States and aided by the CIA. It was in the context of that war effort that Saddam received chemical and biological warfare agents from the United States government, and also received a lot of technical assistance from Soviet Russia, from people who were attached to their biopreparat chemical warfare, biological warfare apparatus. So you had Saddam Hussein essentially being a double dipper, as so many of these other tyrants were during the Cold War, where you had both the United States and the Soviets building up the same cluster of despots. And the Syrian regime under both Hafez al-Assad and under Bashar Assad, interesting, Bashar Assad, the hereditary heir, the hereditary ruler of the dictatorship there, the Alawite dictatorship in Syria, started his career as a dentist of all the unlikely things before his dad died off and gave him the family business, which was dictatorship. But they're a regime that has been considered an antagonist to the United States, and of course they were supported by the Soviet Union during the Cold War. But during the early years of the so-called War on Terror, they became a subcontractor for interrogation and torture under the Bush regime. So they were receiving technical advice and support from the CIA. No doubt the extent...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sophia Windham is talking about how, of course, the American government helped to finance the regime in Syria, that same regime which we are in the process of overthrowing today. But then don't feel bad. We were very close to Gaddafi in Libya. In fact, we even sent him people to torture, and he was supposedly on good terms with us. And then suddenly we turned on him and overthrew him and had him executed. And, of course, we were in good terms. We helped and supported and financed Egypt under Mubarak. And then, of course, we turned on him, and he's actually imprisoned at the present time, facing charges, and may well be executed. He may not. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Certainly, we were very close to Assad and helped and financed Syria, and now we've turned on them, and certainly over 200,000, maybe as many as 300,000 of the people have had to flee and living in concentration camps and refugee camps, certainly in both Turkey and in Jordan. Tens of thousands of Syrians have been slaughtered by the terrorists we are financing. We, of course, are providing money for the terrorists, and the money keeps ending up in the hands of Al-Qaeda, and we say, oh shucks, we don't know how that happens, just by accident. I mean, we give this money to the other countries to give to the terrorists, and it always ends up in Al-Qaeda's hands. Gee, we just made another mistake. Go right ahead, William.
There's a certain consistency in the so-called mistakes that are being made that bespeaks design rather than ineptitude. And the other thing I think that is worth remembering here, and this is certainly not an insight that is original to me by any means, but if you're dealing with simple ineptitude, the number of mistakes they're making would suggest that occasionally they would make one that would be to our benefit rather than one than have an unbroken chain of mistakes that are to our detriment. And in the case of what's happening in Syria, I find it really instructive that the people who are most likely to be those to make first use of chemical weapons or nerve agents would be the people who are with the local, if you will, Al-Qaeda-branded Islamist insurrection. I don't think that Al-Qaeda has any institutional existence. I think it's a brand name or a franchise or an idea, rather than being an actual organization. I've not been able to find any evidence that you have a group called Al-Qaeda that has permanency and that has an established hierarchy and things of that sort. You pointed out consistently, of course, Dr. Stan, that there are a handful of people associated with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. What's going on in Afghanistan right now, of course, is really interesting in that we've reached that point in every military occupation where the occupiers have trained up and given cohesion to an infrastructure on the part of the occupied country that is now in a position to do harm to the occupiers. That's how you keep hearing about these insider attacks where police officers, military officers in the Afghan government are turning against U.S. soldiers and killing our men off one or two at a time. There was a horrifying piece in the Military Times about 6 or 7 days ago talking about the fact that the military command in Afghanistan that's in charge of training the police in Afghanistan has redefined its rules of engagement to look upon not merely military age males, which I believe would be a category starting around age 16 or 17, as potential insurgents and thus a legitimate target for lethal force in the context of counterinsurgency, but also children, which is a category that goes down to grade school age or perhaps even younger. And the reason why this is so is because there have been a number of strikes involving NATO officials, NATO personnel, American fighting men particularly, in which they've called in air support and young children have been killed. There's one episode in Helmand province, I believe, a couple of years ago, where an airstrike was called in against a group of shadowy figures who were believed to be digging by the roadside to plant improvised explosive devices. And after the airstrike was consummated, it was found that the three young men who had been seen digging were ages 8, 10, and 12, and they had been sent out to retrieve cattle leavings to use as fuel. And the military command in Afghanistan issued a press release saying it's obviously a terrible case of mistaken identity. These are innocent people. They were collateral casualties of this conflict. And one of the major officials in the U.S. command in Afghanistan said, well, we can't assume that they're innocent because we've seen instances where children have been carrying material that could be used for improvised explosive devices and things of that kind. And, of course, behind that is the question that has to be asked here, which is, if you're fighting a conflict in which you're going to find yourself out of military necessity, either perceived or actual, targeting children, is this the right war to be fighting? And the obvious answer is no. There's just no moral framework in which we'll be justified to target children. It's become very standard now for the Obama administration to target population centers for remote-controlled drone strikes, missile strikes involving these unmanned aerial vehicles, in which you see children among those who are killed and first responders and emergency personnel being killed in the second half of the double tap strike. This is state terrorism, and it's really a reproach and a rebuke to what we should be as a country, that we permit this sort of thing to happen. And it's not merely a case that this is something that is claiming the lives of foreign children. There, of course, was that horrible example of what happened to Abdulrahman Al-Awlaki, the 16-year-old Colorado-born, I believe Colorado or New Mexico, I think he's native to Colorado, 16-year-old U.S. citizen who was killed a little more than a year ago in Yemen. And he was killed by a drone-fired missile while he was in the backyard of a friend's home in Yemen, enjoying a barbecue. He wasn't involved in any kind of illicit activity. He was never identified as a criminal suspect or a terrorism suspect or suspected militant. He had the misfortune of being the son of Anwar al-Awlaki, who had been identified by the Obama administration, and I believe by the Bush administration, as a militant, but they were never able to articulate, apart from a couple of things that were wrested out of a terrorist suspect through torture, after the fact, after they had killed Anwar al-Awlaki, they were able to confirm through this illicit means that he was supposedly a suspected militant. But he was never hauled up on charges, and just in the weeks before he was killed last year, he'd been in contact with the U.S. Embassy, so it's not as if you're dealing with the Scarlet Pimpernel. They seek him here, they seek him there, et cetera, et cetera. They knew where he was. He was called into the consulate in order to deal with surrendering his passport because it apparently renounced his U.S. citizenship. That process wasn't completed, so he was, for all intents and purposes, still a U.S. citizen when he was murdered, no other word is appropriate, by a presidentially ordered drone strike. And then a couple of weeks later, his son was killed because his son was in Yemen and he was a target of opportunity. And Dr. Stan, just in the weeks before the presidential election, a White House spokesliar, Robert Gibbs, was asked by an independent journalist about the execution of Anwar al-Awlaki, and what Mr. Gibbs said, in essence, was that it was really the young man's fault that he had a father who was so irresponsible so as to make himself an enemy of the state. And so I guess by virtue of the constitutionally impermissible concept of corruption of blood, the fact that he was the son of an enemy of the state made him fair game for this drone-fired missile strike that is murder by presidential decree.
But the thing that really bothers me, William, is that this was not brought out in the election. Mr. Romney didn't bring any of these things out, the murder. He didn't bring, not once did he mention torture. In fact, he wanted more military involvement rather than less. I mean, at least Obama talks about pulling our troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't think he's ever going to. We still have our troops in Iraq. Maybe not, they call them, they're really not combat troops. They're more training troops than we have there. But certainly, where are our ministers? Where are our political leaders? Where are our philosophical leaders speaking out against frank murder, speaking out against torture? And of course, it is deafening in its silence. Go ahead.
And that silence condemns us because we take moral responsibility for those things, those conspicuous crimes that are committed in our name, if we do not repudiate them. And in this case, this is the type of a crime, the murder of the 16-year-old child, is the type of a crime that prefigures some awful things to come, because we have seen just in the last 6 months or so this manic proliferation of drone missions being flown in the United States by the military. This is something that was revealed by a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, by the, I believe, the Electronic Privacy Information Council. I'm getting that name wrong. EPIC is the name of the organization, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been the Electronic Freedom Frontier. But one of these two watchdog groups was able to use a FOIA in order to wrest from the Pentagon a number of documents confirming the fact that the military is constantly operating drones within the boundaries of the United States, not merely overseas. But these drones are being deployed on supposed testing and research missions. And one of these missions involves a technology called Gorgon Stare. The Gorgon, of course, was a figure from ancient mythology, a monster that was able to take in everything with, I believe, this huge cyclopean eye. And Gorgon Stare is a series of sensors and high-resolution cameras that can take in an entire city at a glance. And you've got these Reaper and Predator drones that have been repurposed and being flown over cities in California, Nevada, and Utah, and elsewhere. And this is something which, of course, is entirely impermissible constitutionally, but this is the same technology that was used to kill this 16-year-old child. There was a remarkable interview just this last week on CNN with Nasser al-Awlaki, and he's the father of Anwar and the grandfather of Abdurrahman. And he was finally able to speak his piece, albeit for an international audience, because this is the sort of thing that we're not going to be exposed to here by our domestic media, talking about the fact that he had been trying for years to use the legal system of this country to obtain an injunction against the Obama administration for its open and admitted intent to murder his son. And what he was told is that he didn't have standing to represent his son, and that the only alternative that Anwar al-Awlaki had was to turn himself over to the federal government, to the custody of the federal government, which had already said that it reserved the right to kill him summarily by putting his name on an execution list, on a presidential hit list. So what we had been told until very recently was that al-Awlaki was hiding somewhere in the trackless, it's not a very large country, Yemen, but somewhere in Yemen he was hiding. He was inaccessible. He wouldn't come in and cooperate with authorities, but on several occasions in the year before he was killed, he'd had direct contact with the FBI and with the U.S. consulate. They knew where he was. So it wasn't as if they couldn't have put him under arrest if they had probable cause to arrest him for an actual crime. Instead, they made a demonstration out of this. They made this a test case to justify the summary execution of an American citizen, or in this case, somebody who was in the process of repudiating his citizenship, because the president said so on his own supposed authority. He could simply order the summary execution of this U.S. citizen.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. I see where I've forgotten whether it's the ex-premier of Thailand or some other country, is now being indicted for murder. And basically, there is no statute of limitation on murder. And even if you are a president or a premier, certainly, you can be tried for murder. And I really believe that there should be an indictment of Obama for murder. This is murder. And certainly find out if this is legal and what he's doing. I mean, he's the one who says it's legal. But where is the outcry from our legal profession? Where is the outcry from our religious leaders? And it's just not there. This is what bothers me, because I do not believe God is happy with a country that goes around murdering people, whether they're guilty or innocent. We have a legal system, and certainly you cannot simply do away with that legal system and kill a 16-year-old boy because his father was accused, never convicted, accused of being a terrorist.
Never prosecuted, never indicted, never subject in any way to any of the non-negotiable terms of due process defined in the Bill of Rights. That case with the former Thai Prime Minister is really quite interesting, because it's not, as I understand it, as I've read about that case, it's not a matter of him specifically ordering the execution of the protesters. It was a matter of command responsibility, which, of course, is a venerable Anglo-Saxon principle. It goes all the way back at least to the Glorious Revolution in Middle Ages, Britain in the Middle Ages, the idea that if somebody acting in your name does something which is a crime against the established laws dealing with the rights of non-combatants, and you countenance this you merely countenance it after the fact. You bear command responsibility for that crime. The idea is that someone who acts in the name of the king, and if the king accepts those acts done in his name, somebody acts in the name of the king is an extension of the king's will, which means that if those acts are immoral and illegal, then the king is responsible for them. In the case of Barack Obama, he has actually ordered the execution of these people, including the 16-year-old child. So we're in a situation now where Thailand, which has never been known as a haven of due process or a refuge for the oppressed and afflicted, is being more faithful to the principles of Anglo-Saxon law than whatever it is the United States has become under in the age of Barack Obama, the legacy, the long shadow of George W. Bush. And, of course, it only gets worse from here because we're granting them impunity at a time when things are really going to start going haywire with our economy, with our culture. And once again, I go back to what I was so impressed with was I was enduring this gale force outpouring of Marxist partisanship from MSNBC. These people are supposed progressives. They're supposed fetishists about civil liberty. But they have owned and supported and promoted everything that their dear leader has done in terms of destroying what remains the Bill of Rights. And not a single one of these people has had so much as a syllable of criticism for the murder of that 16-year-old child.
William, before we go any further, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get your material, how they can get to your PayPal button.
I appreciate that. My chief website is Pro Libertate. Just go to Google and type in my name, Will Grigg, Pro Libertate, the blog, which should probably be the first return. Or write in Will Grigg and Pro Libertate. Libertate is spelled L-I-B-E-R-T-A-T-E. At the bottom of every essay, there is a PayPal button that people can use if they're interested in donating to help keep my website up and running and to keep me and my family up and running, quite frankly. That's the bottom of every essay, Pro Libertate. I also write quite a bit for LewRockwell.com, L-E-W-Rockwell.com, and Freedom's Phoenix Magazine, an online magazine, is another venture I'm involved in. Freedom's Phoenix is published by Ernest Hancock, and of course he lives in Phoenix, Arizona. Freedom's Phoenix, one word, freedomsphoenix.com is the website, and if you go to Freedom's Phoenix, you'll be able to find out how you can subscribe to that digital magazine.
All right, fine. Well, our guest, of course, has been William Grigg, and now what about the PayPal button? You didn't mention that.
Oh, I did. It's the bottom of every essay at Pro Libertate, the blog.
Okay, and certainly, William certainly is well deserving of your help. He writes our monthly newsletter, for which we're eternally grateful. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. William, you've got 3 minutes to certainly wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, as always, I really do appreciate not only the opportunity to be on your program, but also everything that you and your family have done for me and my family, and the many acts of kindness and generosity that have been directed at us from members of your audience. And I've had the experience of the last couple of weeks speaking with and exchanging emails with many people who are part of your audience. They're some of the finest people to whom I've ever been exposed, and I just wanted to take a moment and make conspicuous acknowledgement of the fact that you've been a blessing in our life, and they've been a blessing to us as well. And we're going to need as much help and support from each other as we could possibly muster as we confront the challenges that lie ahead and what's likely to be a terribly important and challenging year. I think that 2013 is going to be one of those bellwether years in the history of our country where we're going to see some great, potentially world-changing events that, in hindsight, will be looked upon as sort of hinge points in our nation's history.
Well, I really think, of course, I don't know whether we're going to have possibly an EMP attack on America. We could always have a nuclear attack on America. We could have a chemical or biological attack on America. Because, of course, the terrorists, if they are successful, will end up with the chemical and biological weapons that they have in Syria, which, of course, were given to Assad by Saddam, who was given the biological and chemical weapons from the stores of the United States. And certainly with the help of Bechtel Corporation, the chemical weapons were actually, some of them were actually built right there in Iraq. But under any circumstances, certainly we're going to have to start making our plans. We're going to have to try to get our neighbors to understand. We may see violence in our cities somewhere down the line. They're going to have to begin cutting back on the food stamps because, quite frankly, the government has to borrow today. 40 cents out of every dollar spent has to be borrowed. Probably within another year or two, it'll be 50 cents, and 60 cents out of every dollar spent will have to be borrowed. You can't do this indefinitely, ladies and gentlemen. The whole house of cards is coming down. I believe that's what they want. And out of the chaos, well, we're going to have to look after ourselves and our neighbors. I think we're going to have to start making preparations locally to find people who feel as we do. How do you feel about that, William?
I think that's the best and most intelligent thing we can do, and I agree that we're likely to see some really severe violence in some of our major urban areas. Take a look at what's going on with Detroit right now. Detroit, I think, is sort of a time-inverted portrait of Dorian Gray.
Hold that thought. Well, William was just saying, it really wasn't as I believe, and that is we're going to see increasing violence and chaos in America, and he's talking about certainly what's going on in Detroit today is certainly whole segments of the city are simply being trashed and destroyed. I mean, the city is collapsing from within. Property values have collapsed. The government, of course, is going into bankruptcy here in this next month or two, certainly because they don't have the funds to operate as an independent city. One of the one-time motor city, the center of automotive production in America today, a basket case. William, thank you very much. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, and this is Dr. Stan, and I really do believe you're going to have to start making your preparations for what lies ahead. If you haven't seen Joel Scalzo's books, talking about preparation, we carry the three of them, strategic relocation, the secure home, building a secure room. Our telephone number, if you'd like to get them, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we would point out that we do need your help to finance what we do if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and certainly get the four best tapes or CDs of the month in our newsletter, which was written by William Grigg. Or certainly if you're we could have something you'd like to advertise with us, or certainly if you'd like to donate, or certainly if you'd like to get the books and CD sets and DVDs we have. Why, they will help you to understand what's going on, and they will help to keep us and our 50-some stations every single week on the air, but we do need your financial help to keep doing what we're doing. And if you're not in a position, of course, to help us financially, and I know a lot of people are having difficulty, we ask you to pray for our ministry, for our provision, and our protection. Now, to begin with an understanding of what's going on, you need to get a copy of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and read it and pass it on and get others to read it. Then, of course, you need to get some of our talks, and I would suggest my talk on Agenda 21, the Covert Plan, because Agenda 21 is the plan for the 21st century. It involves the destruction of our society and the elimination of a large segment of our population. And people said, what do you mean a large segment of our population? I'm talking about killing off the majority of the people in the United States, poisoning them certainly with food and poisoning the water and poisoning the air. And we're not talking about imaginary things. You know, must understand water fluoridation. Why don't they fluoridate the water in Europe? Because they know they're poisoning the people. And certainly the vaccines contain all sorts of toxins, and a number of them have contained diseases. The original hepatitis B vaccine during World War II killed dozens of people and infected 27,000. And then, of course, the polio vaccine contained a cancer virus. They knew it was there. 30 million Americans carry that cancer virus. And one reason we have an explosion of cancer is because of the SB40 and the original polio vaccine. How do you think that AIDS came about? Well, it was founded initially in America in the homosexuals in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and in New York. And, of course, that was where they used the original experimental hepatitis B vaccine. And, of course, it was a new hepatitis B vaccine, and they gave it to the homosexuals in New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles, and then, of course, in Africa. in the areas where they use the vaccine, why 25 to 30% of the population is now infected and they're all going to die. In the areas they didn't give it, they have maybe 1%, because of course this disease is primarily genetically engineered to kill blacks. And if you look at the statistics, almost half of all the people who've died and infected in the United States are black. Do you think that happened just by accident? You need, of course, to get the information on this. We have a book written by Don Scott going into how they actually created this disease. They knew what they were doing, but they do not want you to know, because this is criminal activity, and these people should be arrested and tried for murder. And their purpose was to kill off the homosexuals, and to use this as a means of uniting the homosexuals. And, of course, the real purpose was to kill off the homosexuals and to kill off the blacks. Ladies and gentlemen, our number 1-800-544-8927. You need to read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
Ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. Welcome to Power Hour University. That's right. We're here to bring you the information that they forgot to tell us when we were in college or high school or grade school or whatever. That's right. We're going back and looking at history for what it is and perhaps for what we should have been told. Would that have changed anything? Think about that. You know, people that talk about a parallel universe, or if one thing had changed way back when, what that would have changed today? Well, one of those incidents that we're going to be talking about is the heralded December 7th Pearl Harbor Day. We have someone with us today who has written a book called Day of Infamy. And those of you who have been listening to the Power Hour for a long time will know that Robert Stinnett has been a guest for the past 2 years with us, and again this year. He has shared his third December 7th with us, and we are so honored to have him join us today. In Day of Deceit, he talks about the